It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
And it's swung on and missed, strike three, and the ball game is over. A curveball got him, and a very disappointing loss for the Chicago Cubs. They had a 4-run lead in the eighth inning and let it slip away. The final, Arizona wins it 10-6.
We pitched well for five innings, and then, you know, we struggled for three innings, essentially. Okay, we've got a couple big outs in the seventh, and then the eighth inning, we just didn't pitch well.
Unloads first pitch, going back deep to left field, and it is gone. Kyren Parris gives the Angels a 3-2 lead on the ground. This could be two. The flip to second over to first, and a double play is turned, and the Angels take game three, the decider in this three-game series, 3-2.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Wow, what a sports weekend. Tons of fun. We got out to the Bulls game, Mr. David. Great to see you socially, and we had a nice crew out there. Good laugh all the way.
Yeah, it was a fun night at the Bulls game on Saturday. Despite the outcome, it was really entertaining. Good group, good fun. Sunday, as an observer of Chicago sports, it was back to reality.
Yeah.
This was the weekend that we came back to reality. Friday felt very strange and odd and hopeful, full of unexpected outcomes.
That's fair.
And we celebrated it accordingly, as we should have. then I hope we enjoyed it, because yesterday felt very familiar. And we saw the Cubs blow it. We saw the Sox blow it. The Hawks did their part by chipping in with a loss. We saw the Bulls in person lose to the Mavericks after wondering if they could sustain the momentum and not be affected by all the attention created by that great 47-footer by Josh Giddey, the shot heard around the world as far out as Australia. But yesterday, we lapsed back into this familiar just...
Yeah, Thursday seems a long agony. Time ago.
It does seem like a long time ago.
That's when everyone won.
And then we had the chalk tournament.
Oh, the tournament.
The National Chalk Tournament.
Second time ever, right?
It's okay. Four number ones.
Yeah.
Kind of like everybody thought.
Yeah, I know. It's a little disappointing.
It's the... No? Stop.
Oh, don't. Oh, no. I didn't say it. Did
Stop.
I?
Stop. You're not going to say you're disappointed in the tournament here in Chicago.
I think I am. I think I'm going to say that it's just a little too chalky for my taste.
I disagree.
We couldn't get one team to break through a little bit. Does that mean, and I'm just following the plot here. So Auburn was the number one overall seed.
Yes, they were.
And Duke was second. Does that mean they have to face off? I was hoping for Florida.
Well, I think that Florida-Duke is the final that I would like to see.
Yeah, I agree. I think they played as well as any two teams in the
Florida
tournament.
As much as any team did, went out and dramatically seized victory.
Yes.
They were losing. They were struggling.
They were losing so badly that at one point, I believe they were catching 5.5 points. Like toward the end of the game, you know how you do live in-game action?
Well, I didn't know that you were doing live in-game action.
Well,
that's pretty
impressive. I didn't do it.
You're checking your phone and
just looking,
ready to go?
Looking at how
Vegas
unlikely
Mully.
It was. No. I was at the game. I was happy that I had a bracket alive, so I didn't feel like I had to step in. But they were favored by, I believe, 5.5 points.
Yeah.
They won by 5. But if you had jumped in, you could have had, 10.5 at one point.
But your point being that things looked pretty bleak.
It looked bad.
Yeah.
And they somehow pulled it out.
Well, Walter Clayton Jr. refused to let him lose.
That's exactly
and
right.
And he is as close to, be careful here, but calling him the most clutch player left in the field doesn't mean he's the best player left in the field.
And it's not wrong.
I don't think it's wrong either.
No.
Jahni Broome is probably the guy that you look at with Cooper Flagg. We can have an argument or debate over which one of those two players means more to his team and is as talented of a guy left. But I do think we come to agreement that Walter Clayton Jr. is the most – he's the guy I want with the ball in his hands if the game's on the line.
That's fair. Knocking down free throws.
Knocking down whatever you want.
The whole thing.
Really knowing what choice to make. I mean, he passed up a layup to go out and take a three that was as clutch of a three as you're going to see in that game.
Yes.
And it turned the tide. And so he's got ice water in his veins, as they say. And he is the guy you want with the basketball if you're down one and you got the last possession.
I mean, thank you to the Chicago Bulls for having us out. We really had a great time. But at one point, we were sitting there. We had the Cubs game finishing. There's three TVs in the booth.
Well,
we were watching the
totally
Bulls.
Totally transparent. We're in a suite.
Yes.
And that's why we're thanking them for allowing us in that suite.
What a treat.
And it was a treat to be in the suite.
No question about it.
But the three televisions was a big help because it was, we'll watch the Bulls because you can see the court from your vantage point in the suite. You can also see what the Cubs are doing, and you can see Walter Clayton Jr. making history.
Right.
Because nobody can guard him.
It was so great.
And he couldn't miss.
And then obviously we went out into the crowd to enjoy the final push for the Bulls. Unfortunately, everything didn't go right, and they came up a point short.
Klay Thompson doesn't care about what happened on Thursday night.
No, I don't think
he
so.
He certainly wasn't impressed.
No, not
and
overwhelmed at
the,
all.
The Mavs kind of ruined the party.
They did.
They killed the buzz in the United Center.
You know, I knowing that we were going to the game, I got there early, And I went to Billy Donovan's news conference just because I think he's worth listening to.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, he was being asked questions mainly about how do you continue after what a lot of people believe on Thursday night was maybe the best NBA game that we've seen in, I don't know,
the NBA finish.
10 years?
The best NBA finish.
Because it's the Lakers.
Yeah.
Because it's LeBron and Luka, mm-hmm. because of that trade. And then, of course, you know, all the things that went well. And Billy was, he didn't think it was great for the team. And he said that what he said to the players when they met the next day to practice, what he said was not, hey, great job, incredible. He said, how would you feel if Patrick Williams didn't hit his three? Or they couldn't get the steal from Josh Giddey, or to throw it out to Kobe who hit his three? Or the fact that they nailed the half court, like, because it was so celebratory and you felt great about it, you didn't really think about all the things that needed to go right. The message he had was, don't rely on late game heroics. You've got to win earlier in the game. And that's kind of what they did wrong on Saturday night, frankly. They lost the game much earlier, and by the time they came charging back, not everything went according to Hoyer.
Yeah, he definitely
Fuchs
saw it coming.
The big free throw. Yeah.
He saw it coming, and they were unable to take advantage of the
right.
momentum from Thursday night.
He cautioned them in it.
Sometimes I wonder if coaches who caution teams about such things speak them into existence.
Yeah, I know. That went through my head, too.
Because then it is, well, are we going? You could look at it either way.
Right.
Billy Donovan just has a constant awareness of where his team is and how they should respond, and that's what makes him really fascinating to talk basketball with. But he was ready for what happened, and it wasn't because of a letdown necessarily. The Mavs just were pretty good, and the Bulls had some key misses at times where they hit those shots on Thursday night, and it was just too much to ask. They did come back in the final minute. They just missed a free throw that you didn't expect from Vooch, and they
were
unable to finish the job.
Right, right. And, you know, again, now next up is the revenge game. It's Josh Giddey's revenge against Oklahoma City.
That's tonight.
Yeah, I don't know that you can rely on that as the key storyline. I mean, I think we're having fun with it, but goodness gracious, that's a really good team.
Well, yeah, there's definitely not.
Yeah.
That's just a subplot.
Yes.
Very minimal subplot. It's interesting to pay attention to because the trade gets discussed often because Josh Giddey has emerged in the last 6 weeks as a guy worth keeping.
He's emerged as the best version of him, right? He might be playing his best basketball of his NBA career right now.
It's interesting because, you know, part of Saturday night was having conversations with Mark Eversley and Arturis Karnišovas, and they were there and mixing and just watching basketball, just in a more casual setting. But one of the things that came through, and just generalizing because it wasn't on the record and it wasn't something that we're not revealing state secrets here, but there was a belief internally with the Bulls that as much as we're celebrating Josh Giddey now, and I said something to the effect, boy, it's impressive to see a guy improve during the season as much as he has.
I agree.
And there is a consensus internally, I think, that Josh Giddey was as maybe disappointing early in the season as he is surprising now.
Yes.
And fulfilling now. And when he turned the corner in his season, it's not only just noteworthy, but there might have been a sense of, well, it's about time. Because it was time. And he's 22, and you expect that kind of player development to happen in good cases. And this is a good case. And so Josh Giddey, early on, his defense wasn't, it wasn't just us noticing it. I think everybody noticed it, and he needed to get better. The thing of it is that he did. He got better playing defense, and he got better shooting the three.
Josh Giddey, I love you.
Who doesn't now? You love him because you love him enough to where tonight when they play Oklahoma City, and you see Alex Caruso in the headband and diving around the floor and getting those loose balls, and you're like, hey, good for him. You miss him, but you're glad that trade happened.
Yes.
Because it was a good trade for the Bulls.
Yes, it was important
for
them.
And it's going to be for several years ahead.
You would think so.
Because he's a foundational piece.
Yes.
And Alex Caruso is not.
No. No, he's a really good player, and he's a really nice piece, and he might be like the added piece that helps them win a title. Like, I can certainly understand why they make that trade. But, yeah, this is a younger guy who's just coming into his own. Who knows how good he can be?
Well, I think we're going to get a chance to find out in Chicago, because it would be, I don't say inconceivable, but I think it might be unlikely that they let him go to another team. The restricted free agency route is there. Maybe another team will set his price, but I don't see him leaving the Bulls.
I got to tell you, I think that a lot of the players that they acquired, including him with the big trade last summer, but you know, the three guys they acquired in the Zach LaVine deal, they fit in too. I'm going to be very curious to see what next year's team looks like, because they have a lot of guys under contract, because they have guys there that they'd like to keep, but you can't keep everyone.
I don't think it's going to look markedly different from this year's team.
I think you might be right.
Because they do like the new additions.
Yep.
Herter and Collins, I think, are still under contract. They're one of the 14 contracts, I think, that are guaranteed next year. Trey Jones, of the three, might be the most coveted or appreciated by management.
Yeah.
He's a free agent. He might be more likely to move on just because of the going rate in the marketplace and all the things. But he might be a guy that you could see fitting in, because he gives the Bulls something they don't have, and that's a point guard who plays with pace, not necessarily a three-point shot guy, but he gets the ball to the right in the right hands. And the Bulls are all about ball movement and unselfishness.
Yes. Yes, pace of play.
And he's that kind of a player.
He is. It's good. I mean, it's fun. They are a worthy product. It's fun to watch them play. And the reason is that at this time of year, I think we talked to Mike Palm last week about this, they're one of the teams that is trying. They're one of the teams that's trying to play every possession. They're working hard. They have not quit on their season, and they know they're going to be in the play-in, very little doubt about that. But we don't, you know, I thought there were two things that on Friday. I thought Mike Palm pointing that out was very interesting to me, because I think Oklahoma City, very young team, they're playing hard too. They haven't given, you know,
but they're trying not, to get playoff shape.
Yeah,
they're trying
not,
to get on. But they're trying
not
to,
resting people.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like they need to give guys days off in order to be good in the playoffs. Like, teams with elderly stars are doing, but they seem to be playing pretty. This game tonight could be entertaining.
Yeah, I think it will be. The Bulls are locked into a tie with the Heat. We'll talk about where they should be landing during the pick six, but they everything is up for grabs now. They could finish 10th. They could finish 7th. All those spots mean different things in terms of their schedule, in terms of their venue for the play-in round, and then you wonder about how competitive they could be if they did, in fact, get into a first-round playoff series.
It was funny because I stuck around and listened to Kid talk, the Dallas coach, and I always liked him as a player. And he was asked a question of, you know, what does it say about your group that you still have a chance to make the playoffs, that your fate is in your own hands? And, you know, he had a kind of a low-key answer to it, but I was thinking, like, the answer is, well, we had Luka for, like, a long stretch of the season. That's why we were good, because that guy's a seriously good player. And Anthony Davis had a good game. I'm not bad-mouthing him, but everybody knows that the Lakers won that trade.
Well, there's no doubt about it. The Mavericks are one game below 500.
Yeah.
And they're still somewhat shell-shocked from the trade nobody thought they would make. And it was to the point where people who are in the league still can't believe that they pulled that off, and why they did it and when they did it.
Yeah.
And the fact that they didn't really try to make a trade and a deal with any other team except for the Lakers is still somewhat absurd.
The fix was in on that trade.
It just feels like the Mavs are still in kind of a post-traumatic trade disorder, PTTD. and they're just reeling still the rest of their season. So yeah, they beat the Bulls. It was a close game. It was a good game. And then Sunday happened, and just rather forget Sunday because the Cubs, the volatility of their bullpen, it just prevents you from being too positive about what's going on with the Cubs because
right.
We can have fun waiting for Matt Shaw to play into
I saw his first
expectations.
Homer.
Yeah, it was great.
You were delighted.
I was so delighted. I was so delighted. Yeah, that was fun. PCA's throwing out a base runner a day, and then he's stealing bases along the way. He's great. There are a lot of things to be happy about with the Cubs, but the volatility of the bullpen just is a sobering reminder
yes.
of how unpredictable and tenuous this all is. Matthew Boyd was terrific. 5 scoreless innings. Starting pitching from Shota over the weekend, very good. So you feel okay about your rotation after Steele and Tyon were a little bit shaky. And then the bullpen does that. What am I to make of that? What am I going to do with that?
Yeah, that's a problem.
I don't know.
That's a problem. It's all a problem. It's a great man once said. But that's really their problem.
That is their problem.
And we saw that before, and I don't understand. I don't understand why you're hoping to get out of something and letting a guy go. What did he give up? 6 hits?
Eli Morgan.
It was so weird. That
no one's going to call him Captain Morgan.
No. He's not as tasty.
That's not a good step toward a good nickname.
No.
Welcome to the Cubs? Really? Welcome to Chicago? Is he? Okay. If you say so. I've seen enough.
Well, how did Craig not see enough?
That was my reaction yesterday yes. when he didn't have it.
Yes.
Not cut him, not get rid of him. You got him. He's got to make the
get
best
him out of
it.
There.
But after
That's
he didn't have
guy.
It, yeah. I've seen enough.
I totally agree.
Give him the hook.
Why did you leave him in?
I don't know.
He went 2/3 of an inning,
yes.
6 hits, 6 earned runs, 1 walk, no strikeouts.
Oh.
It was an intentional walk.
It must be Arizona.
But
this must be the atmosphere.
But all the other walks from the bullpen, they weren't intentional.
The ball,
there were a lot of walks.
The ball doesn't break in Arizona. I don't know if you heard that.
Oh,
it's a break in the ball.
That's what it was.
Still spring training.
You still when the ball's not breaking and the hits are going, at some point, you're like, hey, coach, did you notice that? What did you say? 2/3 of an inning, 6 runs?
Yikes.
At some point, you got to say.
The math is going to be bad on that for a long time.
Let me just hold out of here a second. Let's stop this real quick.
Porter Hodge looked good over the weekend. Ryan Pressly.
Ryan Pressly.
Little shaky.
It's like, do you have enough? Was the master plan of Hector Neris, Astros discard, was that the good plan? And then, we'll try this Astros discard and we'll trade for Ryan Pressly. Ouch. I think he's got 3 innings pitched and 4 walks, 3 runs in 3 innings. That's pretty, consistent, but the walks are crazy.
The takeaway from the Cubs weekend.
He didn't pitch yesterday.
Was that the bullpen is not going to be
improved.
Improved.
Mm-hmm.
And you wanted the bullpen that blew 26 saves last year to give you more of a sense of confidence that the same thing wasn't going to be happening all over again.
That's really what you wanted.
And they go to Sacktown today. It's tonight.
I cannot believe
it's tonight.
You just called it Sacktown.
Is that what they call it? Isn't that the Sacramento?
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
I don't know. It's just too much familiarity for the first time ever playing.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's an opening day, sir.
They will wake up this morning in the municipality known as the City of Sacramento, the California State Capitol.
Can we just call it a hellhole?
That's even worse. Wait, don't correct me for that and then call it what you did.
I'm sorry.
Sir.
I didn't know.
It will be
Sacramento.
It will be another opener for the Cubs, the home opener for the A's. Don't call them the Oakland or Vegas A's. They are just the A's. And they open tonight in the state capital of California. And you watch, mark my words, they will be welcomed the A's, that is, that I think that crowd's going to be fairly lively and noticeable. I would not be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's a Cubs crowd.
Maybe.
I mean.
Maybe.
I don't know. I don't know what drives
them. I'm basing it only on
California.
This is a city that does support the Kings.
Go south, go Southern California, or go Northern California. Those are the good spots.
All right.
Sacramento, no. No. Just a no.
Well, they likely will support this team because it's a novelty. It's short term.
It is a novelty.
And get in there while you can.
It is.
And the Cubs are a draw.
It's a Vegas sideshow because they are eventually going to be in Vegas.
It is literally a Vegas sideshow.
Yeah.
It's the opening act.
That's it.
But the Cubs would be wise not to take this team lightly because if you lose tonight in Sacktown.
I don't know why. It just doesn't ring for me.
Should it be Zacktown now since Zach LaVine's there?
It should be Zacktown because
not the way they're struggling.
Zach Zaidman will be doing the game
tonight. Yeah, I think that's okay. We call it Zacktown. Anywhere that Zach walks into is Zacktown.
He brightens up any place.
He does.
That's a ginger hair genius.
Isn't Ben Brown going tonight? Reference. We've got Ben Brown tonight.
Oh, well, then all is well.
I don't know if all is well.
Oh, he's nice a big Ben Brown.
It means a lot more than it should. Ben Brown.
Someday it will mean even more.
Ben Brown and Joey Estes, 8:30 pregame right here on the Score. The Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network.
Listen.
9:05 first pitch. That's late.
Winnable game.
That is late.
Are you going just for the victory?
What do you mean? Am I going?
I mean,
am I going to watch?
Yeah. I guess what I'm saying is, are you going to stay up all night?
I don't know about all night.
9:05 first pitch.
I don't know about all night.
I mean, honestly, I don't see how I could get out of the third inning.
Maybe
Craig Counsell could pull me.
These innings are going fast. These games are going fast. They're fast games.
Yeah, they're slipping by you.
The White Sox game might have been shorter than the rain delay yesterday.
Well, when you don't hit. Did you see, we got to get to a break, but did you see Kyle Teal has gone nuts.
Nuts.
In two games.
Nuts, yeah.
I'm watching. At Charlotte.
It's crazy.
Really, I know that's a hitter's park, but get him up here. Get him a torpedo bat and get him up here.
Well, somebody should be getting a torpedo bat.
The whole team needs a bloody torpedo.
Yesterday was a long day. When you see a story that quotes the sod father, you know it's been a long day.
Yeah.
At 35th and Shields.
Yeah. How long was the rain delay? 2.5 hours?
Probably a little bit longer than it needed to be because they had a hard time getting the tarp on.
That's tough stuff.
Rough day.
Yeah, everyone.
The grounds crew. Which had a worse day on Sunday, the Cubs bullpen or the Sox grounds crew? 312-644-6767.
We got the pick six next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score.
It's real and it is spectacular.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Oh, sports fan, call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
All right, guys, do you fear the Cubs have a bullpen problem? After falling to the Astros, failing with Astros scraps with Hector Neris last year, is the same thing happening with Ryan Pressly, who wasn't used yesterday after surrendering 3 earned runs in 3 relief innings while walking 4?
They definitely have a bullpen problem. They're running into the same, you know, we talked about the series in Japan and how painful it was, because it was like a continuation of last year without the clutch hitting. Well, that series against Arizona was a continuation of bullpen problems. How many guys are you going to walk in the bullpen?
Too many.
I mean, holy God.
That's the answer.
Awful.
Too many.
Too many is right. You know, Ryan Pressly does not look good. Now, it's really early, and you don't overreact to anything. But holy cow. I mean, how many saves? No,
I'm
saying generally.
Yeah, I know.
I'm talking myself out of it. How many saves they blew last year?
26.
26. Yeah. That's the year. So you see the bullpen, life has twofold problem. First problem, pitcher's length. They don't go as long as they used to. It's a different deal. As a result, you got to have a bullpen. You got to have a group of guys. They you never know on a year-to-year basis how the bullpen's going to be. They've swapped out a lot of guys, and maybe they seem worse, if that's humanly possible. But they do not. They definitely, the takeaway from the second series of the season, and they've yet to win one, is that they got a bullpen issue.
They absolutely have a bullpen problem, and it's kind of dejecting because this series, how many exciting things did you see from Matt Shaw's first major mm-hmm. league home run to Kyle Tucker looking like an absolute superstar?
How about that?
Looking and Pete Crow Armstrong continues to get better and better and better and just is electric on the baseball field. And I saw yesterday that his bat speed is up this year. He's hitting the ball very hard. And
did
that,
you see that stat from Lance Brozdowski?
I did see that.
We should get into that later.
4 miles per hour from last year.
Fascinating research.
From like 74 miles or 70 to 74 miles per hour, something like that. You're seeing very exciting things. And yesterday, that was a game that we talked about. They need to win more comfortably. Well, yes. They have a 4-run lead in the 8th inning, and snap of a finger, it's gone. And then the night before, they have a 4-1 lead going into the 9th inning. And
you're chewing on your fingernails.
Yeah, and but for Dansby Swanson, they lose that game too. Yeah. So
heads he play.
Yeah, and all heads of these things, like, oh, they need more star power. Well, Kyle Tucker's in the lineup now. PCA is developing. Matt Shaw hits his first home run. And yet, we're still talking about how bad the bullpen is.
I felt it Saturday night watching Ryan Pressly struggle. Oof. Had some major Craig Kimbrel vibes and memories.
Is he still available?
Similarly, Craig Kimbrel came to the Cubs after accomplishing a lot in his baseball career. And he came to the Cubs higher on reputation than results, as it turned out. And trying to squeeze out whatever was last of his career. And when Ryan Pressly struggled again, I'm sorry, that was my reaction and thought. Why was he available? He was available for a reason. The Astros tend to know what they're talking about. I know that there was a setup factor for Josh Hader. It didn't work out last season, whatever the case is. But I'm starting to wonder, why was he available? So that was Saturday night. Sunday didn't make me feel any better. Eli Morgan, where did they get him? Did you save the receipt? Can you take him back? I don't know what you can do here. That was bad. So as bad as he was, then I started wondering, why is he still in the game? Oh, okay, Craig Counsell. He's still in the game because Julian Merriweather wasn't available. Well, why wasn't Julian Merriweather available? Oh, he warmed up? He warmed up too often?
Yeah, I caught that too.
So, wait. Whose decision was it to warm him up and not use him? And if he's going to warm up and you can't use him, why is he warming up so often? Didn't make any sense. Doesn't fit together. And it feels very much like 2024.
That's another really good question.
All right, guys, what is your take on the White Sox opening series? Should they have done better? Or are you okay with a 1-2 start? Is it better than you imagine or right about what you thought?
Well, I had higher hopes after seeing how clean Thursday's game was and feeling like they were off to a very sound, fundamental start going into Sunday. And then Sunday's first inning reminded you that this team isn't quite there yet. You know, a couple defensive miscues led to a run that they didn't ever overcome.
Yep.
And that's the margin of errors that is so thin. You need more offense. You want more of this or that. The one thing about the White Sox that was encouraging, I think two things for me. Yes, they're 1-2. We have to remind ourselves the record isn't as important as some of the other factors. They have solid starting pitching. Their starting pitchers have yet to give up an earned run this season. And they also just look more like a baseball team. It's hard to quantify and describe, but maybe we're seeing what we want to see. But it seems like the White Sox under Will Venable know what they're doing, and they look like a baseball team. And it always is nice to see Luis Robert Jr. look a little bit more engaged than he did at times last year.
Yeah, I think that the starting pitching is the biggest takeaway, that they have a lot of intriguing. Stop me if you've heard this before. They have some good pitchers, the starting pitchers and pitching prospects, and guys that you feel like, okay, well, will they be able to build around them, or is this going to be another cycle where they're going to be selling these guys off for more prospects? When does this cycle end? But I think that the last two games of the series reminded me, at least, that it's still not a very good offensive team.
Right.
And they're going to be in a lot of these games, and it's going to come down to, like you said, David, the margin of error, like it did last year, where they were on the wrong side of a lot of 1 or 2 run games. And I think that this year is going to be more of the same.
I agree with you. I think they're going to lose a lot of 1-run games. You know, the minute I saw Teal was hitting, I'm like, bring that guy up. They don't have offense. They need people to hit. 1 run, losing a game without scoring a run, a team beats you 1-0, that's really awful. That means your offense is just god awful. And then that game, you know, I agree with you, they shouldn't have given up that run, but it's 2-2 when you resume, and you got as good a chance. Oh, no, you don't. You lost. So I think it's what I expected. I think the first win was really well received, but I this is a bad team that they played too, and they lost a couple 1-run games. If they could win 1 game a series, I think it'd be satisfying. It'd be a lot better than a year ago. But you'd like to see them. You win the opening game of a series, get the series.
One game per series. So it's basically one out of everything. You want them to play 333 baseball.
That's kind of, I don't want them to. I'm saying
that'd be 54 victories.
That's more than I picked.
Okay. That's right at the number.
See what I'm saying?
I can see. So you're not exactly distraught over the weekend.
Oh, no. I think the manager kind of knows what he's doing a little bit. Like, I one of my takeaways from watching them go 1-3 to open the season is how god awful was Pedro.
Trying to forget that.
I know.
And I remember the question was,
what do you think of the Final Four, and who's the favorite in your mind? Do you think the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee feels vindicated by all the number one seeds being in the Final Four and the chalky brackets?
Yeah, I suppose they got it right. They probably feel really good about that, all four. I don't know how I feel about it, frankly. It's kind of, I'd like to see more of an upset here and there. I wish Michigan had won, because I got 3 of the Final Four, but that's, I have 1 5-seed, or were they 5-seed or 6? Yeah. I've lost the plot. So I wish the Big Ten was represented. But I think Duke is the best team in the country. I think we learned that. We knew that coming in. They got probably four pros on that team, including the number one overall pick, and they looked good. They had one kind of test, kind of. Did they win that game by 20? They won the first two by 20. They just took over that game. And it's a good team they beat, and they beat the hell out of Alabama. So I feel like they're the best team left. I think Florida, I think Auburn is a really good team, and I can't understand now why I got off them toward the end of the year. I believe it had a lot to do with the fact that they were losing games. I think they lost two games at the end of the year and then lost in the tournament. And I think I was kind of thinking they might be a little flat. They've been very good. But Florida, I think I want Florida Duke, not just because that's what I picked before it started, but I think they might be the two best teams. They might be.
Yeah, I'd say Duke is the favorite at this point, yep. Although Houston's a tough test because of the offense, the way they played offense this year. They've shot the three well in the NCAA tournament, and it's not just a Kelvin Sampson defensive-minded team. But they are that. But are they going to be able to win a track meet against Duke if that's the pace that it's at? I don't think so. Florida Auburn's intriguing. Florida has been, I was talking to Tyler before this, he's a Florida fan. They've been tested to this point in the NCAA tournament. So is that because they have not been playing their best basketball, or is that going to be a good thing when they play a team for the third time this season? But I think as far as the selection committee goes, they did get it right, but we're going to have to readjust how we think about the NCAA tournament. This was a tournament around upsets early on and seeing name brands in the Elite Eight at times. Now we're not even going to see the upsets in the first and second rounds. We're not going to see mid-majors getting to the Elite Eight or the Final Four very much anymore because of how the talent is going to be concentrated at the top with the teams with money. So I think based on the ratings, it tells us that the marketplace enjoys that. And whether I feel I'm with you, Molly, I think it's a little too chalky for my liking, but it is what it is.
When did Tyler become a Florida fan? Thursday or Friday?
Oh, wow.
True story. I grew up a big Tim Tebow fan as a kid.
Okay.
So not a bandwagoner.
I could respect
that.
That's good. You're ready for that answer, weren't you? Yeah.
100%.
All you got to do is just get down on one knee. And give it
that. Well, I can be disappointed with having four number one seeds if I choose to. It's sports. You don't have to all think alike. I know a lot of people will argue the ratings are high, the competition is the best, and these are the four most deserving qualified teams. And you would be exactly right. But something's missing this year for me. I'm just speaking from my own individual viewing experience. There's something missing from this tournament. Maybe it's a lack of close games. It doesn't seem like there are many.
Could be Tim Brando.
No, it's not. It's not that. It's not that. And I know.
You want me to get him on?
Alienating guys who believe what I'm saying is just a product of being in a flyover state that doesn't pay attention to college sports.
You're blue. Let's face it.
Well, let's face it.
You're in a blue state.
And I think that may have something to do with it. I don't know.
Wow.
But it does feel like there's something from this tournament that is lacking from the others that preceded it. And there isn't an upstart mid-major. Okay. I know why. Everybody who pays attention to college sports, and we do, knows what's going on here. The mid-majors are developing talent for the big guys. And even the big guys can't retain and keep their own talent. Did you see the Big East Player of the Year has entered the transfer portal after getting benched by Rick Pitino the final 8 minutes for St. John's? So it's not just what's going on in mid-majors. It's going on everywhere. You've got to keep your own talent. You know, Kentucky made a nice run against Tennessee with all new players from a year ago. They were in Lexington for 365 days, practically. So I look at this tournament, and I think the Final Four is the best four teams. Duke is probably the favorite. I hope it's Duke and Florida. And I hope that there's some drama and some close games, and they're not like 15-point leads you're trying to whittle into double digits so you can have a nice finish so you can justify watching the last 2 hours.
There's going to be a lot of questions on the draft process.
Yeah, speaking of that, Ryan Poles, Penn State tight end Tyler Warren didn't work out at Penn State's Pro Day last Friday, but the Bears are one of three teams reportedly with whom he will meet. What do you think of the Bears taking Warren if he's there at 10? How is it similar or different than taking a running back at that spot?
Well, I think Tyler Warren, I still don't know why he didn't work out. I wonder if there's something there. I don't believe it's an Abdul Carter situation where he didn't work out either, but because he was saying his shoulder was still iffy, but it might be because of his foot. The Abdul Carter situation bears watching as much as anything out of Penn State. If he's there at 10, I think the Bears will be tempted. It's a different argument to me than the Ashton Jeanty argument, because I think you could probably trade down at that point if he's there at 10 and not feel like you have to take him. Everybody will point to Brock Bowers and the impact he made as a rookie. I don't see that in Tyler Warren. I see he would fit well alongside Cole Kmet, but I think it would be a duplicate part, and that would be a luxury you can't afford at number 10. Ashton Jeanty, that's a different conversation, and I think he would add more value to your offense than maybe Tyler Warren would. That said, if Ben Johnson feels fixated on getting the second tight end so he can run all those two tight end sets that he likes to do, I'd listen. I'd listen to that explanation, and I'd be very curious. But no, I would not think that the Bears would be, despite being one of three teams that they're going to meet with, he's going to meet with. I don't know that that would be, for me, plan A or B.
Yeah, I'm with you, David. I don't know if he gets there, 210. I think that there's a chance that someone snags him a little bit earlier than that. But I keep coming back to offensive line. It's been a theme of this offseason, and I know some people are like, oh, it's fixed now. Now go draft Ashton Jeanty or Tyler Warren. I think that those two would be similar in your thinking. You do need a running back. You need a lead back if you are the Bears. DeAndre Swift is – we've got to adjust our thinking and realize that he's not – a lead back, a guy that's going to get 15, 20 carries, a guy that you trust running between the tackles. And Cole Kmet is a fine tight end, but like you said, having another one would be, especially a pass-catching tight end like Tyler Warren, who has the ability to be a solid inline blocker, it's a nice luxury to have. But if Kelvin Banks out of Texas or Will Campbell out of LSU, or even if they feel like Josh Simmons from Ohio State is feeling well and his medicals check out, how many more left tackle prospects are you going to pass on like you did last year? It was a tough decision. They took Roma Dunze over Olu Fashanu, who had an outstanding rookie year.
Yep.
Are you going to do it again and say, all right, well, we have a chance to upgrade at left tackle and we're not going to do it?
Yeah, I think it's well said. I want them to stick on the line of scrimmage. I think that the 10th pick has to be one of two positions. It has to be a tackle, a left tackle, hopefully, or a pass rusher. I think those are your two options. Maybe the pass rusher could be an interior guy, but there aren't enough of those to go around. I got to tell you, there are running backs, pretty deep class, and there are tight ends. Didn't Warren run like a 4.68 at the combine? He's not a sprinter. He's a guy that gallops past
big people. Body too.
Big body, great catcher of the ball, great body control guy, but not like, he's not like a speedster. He's more of a tight end that can do a lot of things that are very important. I think you could take him at 10, just like Ashton Jeanty could be taken at 10. They could be gone by 10, both guys. So I'm kind of with what Alex is saying here, which is, you know, when are you going to do it? If you're not going to build an offensive line, the idea is to build enough of an offensive line that when different players retire, you are still there. You don't want changeover every year. You want to invest in guys, put them in there, and see how long they can last. So I'd stick with that.
I don't know if that answered the question.
With eight games left, the 33-41 Bulls are tied with the Heat for the final play-in tournament spot. But while with still within reach, 2.5 games of the 7th seed. What do you think the Bulls are hoping for, and what do you expect them to land? Where do you expect them to land?
I think they're hoping to make the playoffs. I think they're going to make the play-in. I would imagine that they're going to win some games down the stretch here, but they're not going to get to 500. They have very little possibility of doing that. I believe they play a really good team tonight, and that's the best team maybe in basketball, and I have low expectations for them tonight. But I think they can, their schedule says they can win some games, and that they're going to be. I have felt it inevitable that they would wind up as a play-in team, and I still feel that way.
Yeah, I have them finishing 8th. I think they lose Oklahoma City tonight.
Yeah,
I think they lose in Cleveland, but the rest of the schedule, they are playing terrible teams.
Yeah.
Toronto, Portland, Charlotte, Miami, Washington, and then, of course, the Philadelphia 76ers, who haven't been trying to win for months at this point, or weeks and months at this point. So I think they will finish 8th and be in the play-in tournament spot and finish a couple spots higher than they have in the last couple years. And that's where they will wrap it up.
If they get into the playoffs, it's an invitation to get swept.
Yes, yeah, it is, definitely. Sweep. But you would benefit, I still believe, from that experience. Your young guys, as Billy has talked about, you would definitely gain something from the struggle, if you will. And they would struggle against either first-round opponent. I believe if you are 8th, you get a home playoff game. And if you're 7th, you might get 2. Or that is the difference between 7, 8, 9, and 10. You want to be 8th then. You want to get a home play-in game. You want to get in a position where you can get to the next round. I don't know that it seems like a foregone conclusion if they're 9th or 10th, if they're going to get into a playoff series. If you're in 7th or 8th spot, you could justify the hope and maybe the interest and all of the investment that you'll have. They're fun to watch lately. They're fun to watch Saturday night, even in defeat. You know, this is a team that plays with pace, and Matas having the kind of night that he had Saturday night reminded you of just how far he's come since the beginning of the season. You know, this is a rookie that we're watching develop in real time, and we're seeing the coach hold him accountable for things, which is really refreshing to see. So I think that they are probably going to finish. I think, Alex, that's they have 8 games left. I think maybe 6-2 does it. And they end up probably in the 8th spot. But at least they have been relevant. I mean, relatively speaking, everything is relative, but relevant lately, and that's been an improvement.
These are concerns and questions that people are asking.
That's the voice of Kyle Davidson. What did you think of the Blackhawks playing 6 first-round draft picks, all selected by that voice you just heard, Kyle Davidson, in a loss Sunday to Utah? Was the outcome relevant at all, and is this going too young?
Well, it's unprecedented, I believe, to have 6 first-round draft picks in a lineup, all chosen by the general manager who still has the job. A lot of times you might see guys who were there from a previous regime. This is really going young. This is like the Blackhawks prospects camp takes the ice against the Utah Hockey Club. And I think, though, it's exciting. Sam Rinzel is an aggressive defenseman. You just, wow. And he's an offensive-minded defenseman. Oliver Moore can fly on the ice.
Yep.
That kid is really fast. Frankie Nazar is really fast. Connor Bedard is who he is. And then you've got other guys, Vlasic and Young, Korchinski, and then Artie the Party, Levshinov. I think they're going to get tired of that nickname.
Artie gives away the puck too much.
He's a little bit careless right now. But they are talented. They are young. I like this about them. They want to build together. And Ozzie is kidded about the White Sox. When they're all ready from Birmingham or Charlotte, put them in a bus and bring them to Chicago together.
Here's the team.
Wait until they are all ready, then you bring them and they arrive together. The Blackhawks pretty much did that. It's like you got a coach bus from Rockford coming in, pulling up at 1901 West Madison, and there they are. They're going to struggle, but it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, this is always an interesting time of year with players signing their entry contracts, a lot of first-round picks, and you'll see sometimes contending teams playing a guy straight that was in college a couple of weeks ago. But for the Blackhawks, it is an interesting time, and you see the talent that they have drafted. You see the system is strong, and you see that there could be some guys like you mentioned, Oliver Moore and Frankie Nazar, who are potential line mates of Connor Bedard down the line. But it also reminds you that these guys are still very raw and still a long way from being contenders in the NHL, just them. Kyle Davidson is going to have to figure out who are going to be the best role players to put around Connor Bedard in the meantime to win in the next couple of years, or we're going to continue to see them be drafting in the lottery year after year. The goal right now is how can they get out of this cycle of drafting high in the first round?
It's interesting because, you know, the Frozen Four is going on. Big win for Penn State. First time ever to the Frozen Four yesterday. But, like, Minnesota gets eliminated and the two boys come and sign with the Blackhawks. Now they're playing with the Hawks. It's, like, pretty unbelievable how quickly the ascension is. And it's, you know, they want to get their guys. It's the end of the year. The season's over. Hey, here's some fun. Let's get a little electricity going. And that's great until you start giving up the goals, right? They played the Utah hockey team. They lost to the Utah hockey team. And that's the kind of embittering part of it is, you know, they hold them scoreless for a period, and then they all of a sudden they get back in the game and the game's tied and then they get slaughtered. And that's a bad loss, yet another one, because they got all these inexperienced young guys. And it's good and it's hopeful for the future, but I don't think they all belong playing right now on the Blackhawks, other than it's the end of the season.
They're taking a look.
That's all they're
NHL doing. Has that weird sort of timetable and rule that you can bring these guys up after their college season ends. Nazar did it.
Yeah,
year ago, he made a really good impression.
Yeah,
gave them kind of a taste of it, which is.
But wasn't that crazy? They sign on Saturday and they're playing yesterday.
Yeah, it's crazy. There are no minor league.
Yeah,
kind of apprenticeship phrase of those guys.
It'll come.
And they didn't look shy.
No,
that's the one thing. Moore can fly, and he looks the part. And when you have a guy as active as Renzel was,
he was good.
Yeah. It's fun to see these guys and imagine what they could be together, but it just is going to require some patience, a lot of it.
All right, we got the extra point next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
All right, guys, back to the NCAA tournament. How do you feel about all four number one seeds remaining in the Final Four? Is it the chalkiest tournament you can remember? Does it mean that Auburn and Duke are destined to play in the national championship?
Well, it feels that way, but I don't know that I would rule out the way that Florida's playing either, just because they seem to be a team that refuses to lose. And Walter Clayton Jr., as we said earlier, is probably the most clutch player left. When you have Cooper Flagg and you have Jani Broom, you have two of the baby guys who were the best players left. I think Broom's injury could be a factor in terms of how does he feel today? How does he feel this week? That was an ugly fall. And then he goes out and can we agree that not every time a guy comes back, we should agree as a broadcast community, every time somebody comes back from an injury during the game, we don't have to reference Willis Reed. It, doesn't have to be a Willis Reed moment.
Willis Reed had like a broken leg.
Thank you.
And but that was game seven.
And they kind of just led into that. But Broom coming back from the locker room and hitting a three the second or third possession he was on the floor was very dramatic. And I think that kid's easy to like. Auburn, I don't think is as easy to like just because of Bruce Pearl. That's a personal thing. But I hope that Florida beats Auburn. And I hope that Duke beats Houston. Eliminates those two teams and those two coaches. And then it's Duke and Florida. And we can go pull for John Shire because he's, you know, he's a local guy made good.
Yep.
And he's an easy guy to root for. And this is his first Final Four as a head coach, I believe. And he's got the team that's probably the deepest and the best. So I'm not crazy about the four number one seeds. I'm not sure if anybody – I'm sure people really are, but go Duke.
I think we're going to see Duke and Florida as well in the championship game. And – I think at this point in the tournament, people do want to see name brands to a certain extent. This is the chalkiest tournament I can remember, though. Leading up to this point and just the consistency of the higher seeds and the favorites winning has been beyond anything that I can remember, including the 2008 tournament that ended up with Memphis losing to Kansas in that final game. That was the last time we saw, and the only other time we saw, four number one seeds in the NCAA tournament.
2008. The Derrick Rose Final Four?
The Derrick Rose Final Four, where they should have won. Couldn't hit free throws down the stretch. Mario Chalmers gave Kansas the lead. But I looked at my bracket pool last time. I'm doing one with some friends, and there's like several people in this 200-person bracket that are at over 99% correct picks,
yep.
Where they just pick chalk. And I've never seen that before. This is the chalkiest tournament I've ever witnessed.
Yeah, I think it's – there are different years where there's kind of some chalky outcomes, and obviously it's only the second time you've had four number one seeds. But, like, who's really been challenged? You know, Florida was challenged, and they came back and won. Florida had a really tough game against UConn early in the tournament. That makes me feel like they're kind of tournament tested. Has Auburn really been challenged? They, you know, I mean, when Broom goes down, that's scary, but he comes back. I don't know. And they won that game fairly handily. They won by five, right?
They won it handily because Michigan State was
– yeah.
It was really chucking up some bricks.
It was terrible.
It was really poor shooting display.
But Duke hasn't really been challenged. They are like so much better than everyone else. It's been kind of crazy, and I think that Houston handled Tennessee so easily. It's just hard to believe that Tennessee team. I thought was a pretty good team, and Houston. Had literally no problem with them. Is it LJ Liddell? Who's the kid? They got a really good player.
LJ Crier,
I'm sorry. Crier is an excellent player, just like a really good basketball player. You know, these games should be really good. I hope that Houston can challenge Duke. Wouldn't that be great? And I think Auburn and Florida are very familiar with each other, and I think that's a really cool thing to play three times in a year.
The question asks about being the chalkiest tournament.
Yes.
You can remember. And a texter asks a very good question. I think we should maybe whiteboard it for some people. So according to the Action Network, you know yes. this as a horse racing guy.
Yes.
But the term chalk originates from the days when horse tracks did not have computerized screens or tickers. Yep. They had to write odds on a chalkboard. Bettors took favorites more often than not, so those odds got more frequent updates on the board. Eventually, the horse's name that kept drawing action was covered in chalk dust. Thus, chalk. The chalkiest of chalk. Chalk, chalk.
Did you say we needed to whiteboard this?
Yes.
Funny. I've been to the racetrack in Ireland, right, where
yes.
you have the mutual things, and then you got individual bookies. So you can go from booth to booth and see slightly different odds, and then you make a decision. If there's a horse you really like, and some guy's got it 3-1, there's another guy's got it, you know, 4-1, It's huge.
Yep. You can shop odds at the track?
At the track with the stations. Apparently that's how it used to be done. And you know, legend has it. The bookie that Rooney used to go to, the old Rooney, right? The original Rooney. That was one of the Giants owners, the mayor. And he was sick the day that Rooney won a trifecta and got enough money to buy the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's hysterical how much a franchise cost in those days, and that's how the Rooneys wound up. The guy hit a trifecta at the track, and he took that money and he became the owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
It's a great legend. That's NFL lore and horse racing lore.
It is.
Just all because we wondered about the origin of chalk. Sure. Because we have the National Chalk Athletic Association.
Yeah.
And it's the final four.
That's what
four.
It is.
It is. It's the chalkiest of all chalks.
Yeah. I love it. Okay. That's good fun.
It's good
312-644-6767. I hope it isn't Auburn and Duke.
Same. Me too. Yeah. When we come back, I know we got to get to Bruce today. We're going to get to Jerry Palm later. We're talking to Brooke Fletcher at 9
yes.
o'clock. Can I ask you about the tornado bats?
Oh, this is the most fascinating
okay.
story out there.
All right, good.
It really is good, isn't it?
It is.
We were looking at them online.
Torpedo bats. I'm yes. sorry. I have tornadoes on the mind.
Tornadoes. I knew what you meant.
Torpedo bats.
It's like
unbelievable.
A bowling pin, kind of like, you know, it makes yeah. sense. Let's put all the wood where you're most likely
yeah.
to hit the bat.
Let's get into it when
I'm
we get
glad
back.
Judge isn't using one because he's hitting so many homers. There could be a question as to whether the torpedo bat is hitting the home runs or he is. We'll do that next. Mully and Haw on the score.
Chuckity chuck 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 yep. chuck.
Mornings with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Trying to be the best we can be. I mean, that's one of the things that's, you know, gotten pointed out. But, you know, I say to you guys all the time, we're trying to win on the margins and trying to get, and that shows up in so many different ways, whether you see, you know, bat models, you know, we saw the momentum steals that Volpe does. You see shifts. Like when I say those kind of things, like we have a big organization that are invested in a lot of different things where we're trying to be better in every possible way.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The score, that's the Yankees manager, Aaron Boone. And he is telling you that they do anything they can, and they got a lot of people working on it. And the latest thing is that the entire team, pretty much outside of Aaron Judge, is using the torpedo bat, the
yes.
new torpedo bat. This has been around for a little bit. It was designed by a baseball guy who went to MIT, and he engineered
former Yankees
the thing.
Analyst.
Yeah,
now with the Marlins as a field manager.
And so their team is they scored 20 runs. The
barrel
day.
Of the bat is bigger.
Well,
it's designed so it's still
yeah. It looks like a. It's almost like that's an exaggeration.
It looks like a wiffle ball bat.
To say it does look like a wiffle ball bat, but basically, like the weight and the strength of the bat is in the area where you make contact with the ball. So it's like one of those. It's almost like take a bowling pin and hold it. Now it's longer. But it has that swell to it toward the like that part of the bat, and then it's thinner again at the end. It's
yes.
like really, it's really odd.
The torpedo
but it
barrel
makes sense.
Is in closer to the hitter's hands, and so it's kind of non-traditional, definitely unique. Also within the rules, MLB had to come out Sunday and say that it did not violate the bat supplier regulations. It's Rule 3.02. The bat cannot be more than 2.61 inches in diameter and 42 inches in length. And the Yankees are fine with it. And it passes the rules regulations. They also we're talking about this because they hit 15 home runs in three games.
I mean, ridiculous.
13 in the first two, which was a record. The Brewers pitching, they were throwing batting practice, and the Yankees feasted on it.
Yeah.
And so it's all the rage. And Michael Kay brought it up during the YES Network's broadcast, and people started paying attention. And next thing you know, they're playing. It's like it's a wiffle ball home run derby.
You know, I mean, it's typical of Major League Baseball, the kind of PR snafu that we're looking at. What are you doing? All you got to do is say, hey, this is a torpedo bat. It's totally approved. And, you know, a lot of people are going to be using it this year.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what it is. And then everybody can either jump on it or stay away from it or do whatever they want. What they've done is they make it look like only the Yankees are using it, and the Yankees are scoring 20 runs a game, and everyone else is out of luck because the Yankees are ahead of everyone and smarter than everyone.
Well, but it does appear like the Yankees are
the team. Ahead of everyone and smarter than
everyone. Yes, it does. It certainly does.
But I'm just saying.
I didn't know that how MLB would
have any. Shouldn't they just say, hey, this is, you know. Just do that before the year starts so everybody gets an opportunity and everybody – they had to know this was coming.
No. Well, I don't know, Molly. 15 homers in three games. I don't know that you can anticipate a barrage like that.
Five of those are Judge, and he's not using a
– Yeah, that's fair enough. But I think that when you see guys having the success and the power coming in that way with the new approach –
What does Stanton need a bat like that for? Isn't he big enough?
I don't
Isn't
know.
Isn't it unfair that he's?
I would
big
try
as he
it
is?
if I'm a major league hitter and I have warning track power. I would definitely try this.
Oh,
I would
anything.
I'd be talking to my people. I'm talking to my bat people. I'd be talking to my agent. I'd be talking to everybody. Like, okay, I want.
I'd be mad right now. That I didn't have
Volpe
one.
Swinging.
Exactly.
Yes.
I mean, if I'm a White Sox player and you can't score a run in a game, you lose 1-0. The torpedo bat's the difference.
Well,
get one.
Cody Bellinger tried it, and he's off to a break, you know, pretty good start. He said he tried it with the Cubs last year in batting practice, but it never took hold. The Yankees are the team that are most prevalent because they had the analyst employed, and he designed it. He's the MIT guy, getting a lot of credit for it.
They embraced it.
Aaron Lienhart is his name, I believe. And so they embraced it. He's now with the Marlins. Marlins
name.
Are doing something right. They got three walk-offs. Did you see that? Goodness
That's
sakes.
A really good name, Lienhart.
It's fun.
You know, some men have like a lot of love in their heart. Some people have a big heart. And some guys have a lean heart. Did you contribute? No. You're not giving in? You're not just going to throw a few bucks in the pot? No.
Talking about his brain, because he came up with this and devised the torpedo bat and... He's getting a lot of credit.
Lean heart, fat brain.
There you go. All right, Cubs and Sox had quite a weekend. Yeah. We should talk about that when we come back.
Mully and Haw on the score.